Welcome to the show, Wish Upon a Star. I'm your host, Andell Banks. Wish Upon a Star is an exciting program that showcases up-and-coming stars in the musical, visual, performing, creative, and literary arts arenas. We will discuss with professional guests about songwriting, entertainment, law, literary careers, copywriting, and other topics of importance in these highly competitive industries. It gives us great pleasure to introduce our special guest, Rosa Rambling Rose Pryor Trustee. Her biography. Rosa Rambling Rose Pryor Trustee is a native of Baltimore. She attended Community College of Baltimore and Morgan State University, majoring in business law. Having been an R&B music enthusiast since 1957, she started out as a singer, songwriter, and musician. She founded the group Little Johnny and the Twilights. She played the saxophone. As lead vocalist, she wrote, produced, and recorded the tune Banks the DJ on Decade Records, a dedication recording to two great radio DJs, the late Paul Fat Daddy Johnson and Rockin' Robin. The Twilights had an opportunity to open for such acts as the Shirelles, the Chantels, Ruby and the Romantics, Jimi Hendrix, and Sam Cooke. Her commitment to the music industry and its artistry was so engraved in her life that in 1964, Rosa became an entrepreneur, helping other musicians establish their careers. She recognized that the young junior and senior high school students needed only her love, expertise, and guidance to tone their vocal and instrumental talents. She has since nourished more than 20 music groups, and together with help from friends in the radio business, booked the band all over the East Coast. In 1967, Rosa acquired her entertainment license, enabling her to book national and international entertainers out of state into large venues. During this time, she owned, managed, assisted, and produced R&B, pop, and jazz musicians. This is to include The Vandals, First Class, The Soft Tones, Lady Rebecca, Nikki Cooper, Mickey Fields, Andy Ennis, Carlos Johnson, Tiny Tim, and many others. Known now as an outstanding booking agent, she established her own marketing agency called Rosa Pryor Productions, booking musicians in the Baltimore, Washington areas. And in 1971, the late Ida Peters, the Afro-American newspaper entertainment editor, quoted Rosa as being the most talked about, most popular, and the only black female promoter in the state of Maryland, Washington metropolitan area. Rambling Rose is the author of a collector's item book titled African America, Entertainment in Baltimore, published in June of 2003, and sold out the first print in 6 weeks. And now the book is in its third printing. Rosa Pryor is also the founder, CEO, chairman of the board of the Rosa Pryor Music Scholarship Fund, created in 1991. Ladies and gentlemen, Rosa's impressive full biography will be in the archive link online at wishuponastar.com. www.bbsradio.com, Station 2. Welcome to the show, Rosa.
Thank you so much, Andel. I mean, that was impressive for the person that you was talking to about. I have no idea who that could have been. Thank you so much for having me. I truly, truly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Okay, Rosa, someone out there might be thinking about being a music promoter. So what is a music promoter?
Well, you know, I've had many, many people to approach me, male and female, about that and wanted me to train them, which is kind of difficult because a music promoter really, first of all, not only have to have the knowledge of music in all aspects, but they also got to have it in their heart and soul. It's just no way that I can imagine anyone being a promoter that knows absolutely nothing about the business, never been involved in the business whatsoever, don't know the entertainers or the entertainment part of the business, and in it for the money, because they'll never get rich that way. It really takes the heart, body, and soul to be involved in something they love from the heart, because that's the way I did it. I just love being in the music industry, and I loved all aspects of it. And I enjoy helping musicians, young and the seasoned one as well. So I would say to be a successful promoter or be a good promoter is to know your artists and to know the business, especially, even after you have to study up on it, and also have it in your heart and soul that this is just truly something you want to do and not going after it for its money.
Great. That leads me into the next question, which you might want to repeat because our listeners may be taking notes. Because some promoters, when they look at them, they're looked upon as celebrities in close contact with rock stars. Everything is glam and glitter. Then others start out with just a dream. What are some pointers if you are thinking about becoming a promoter based on what you just said?
Well, first of all, it's a difference between a male promoter and female promoter, unfortunately.
Oh.
And I said that because I, in the business for so many years, 50-plus years, that I had it kind of hard in a sense, but I've always been a street person. I love being in the clubs and the bars, and I partied in the streets with the clubs and the bars on the avenue in Baltimore and other places. And so I got familiar with the entertainers in personally, as well as the music. Now, when I said the female especially, it's because the promotion in the music industry has always been known as, in quotes, a man's world. And because it is very difficult for a woman to trample on that. When I said trample on that, because the buyer, which is the person that's interested in buying your group or your artist, that they treat you differently. And they did treat me differently. But because of my background, I didn't allow it. When I walk into a venue, whether it was a club or restaurant, and was interested in booking my group, wanted them to be interested in booking my band, then what I did was I walked in there dressed to kill, dressed very chic, very sexy with my attaché case. They weren't sure how to handle that. So when I presented myself and explained to them that I'm here to book my group in their venue, then the first thing they wanted to do was look me up and down and see, you know, check me out. Where if a male went into the club, they'd be ready to, you know, light up a cigarette and have a cocktail and start talking business. But before the owner would talk to me, he would just check me out until I placed my attaché case on the counter, opened my attaché case, pulled out some paperwork, which included the background and information and photographs of the group that I wished to sell him to, that he realized I was taking care of business and nothing else. And I was able to make my move that way. So while he was looking and checking me out. And I, before I left out of there, I had contract signed for my band to be booked there for 2 months.
That's outstanding. Absolutely. And very good, because I don't think people would have given too much thought about the difference between gender if you've got a good group.
Yes, it does make a difference.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. We're learning a lot already. We have Rosa, we have now have our name out in the entertainment arena as a promoter. What are some of the benefits and opportunities associated with being a music promoter?
Well, it depends on the promoter. First of all, it's very important that a promoter walks into a venue into someone else's arena where other artists are performing, and you want to get yourself known or you want to be known. First of all, you go in there with confidence. You have to know the person that is heading up that venue at the time, and do some background checks so when you speak to them that you know what you're talking about. You have to make sure you're educated into whatever the venue or the artist is about. So when you're speaking to the person that has the venue that you wish to book your group, that you know something on the background of the individual. So when they question you about anything, you'll be able to answer them without stumbling over your words or not showing what they are talking about. And if something he says or she says to you that you do not understand, you do not make pretend that you understand. You ask them straight up. I learned a lesson that if I don't know, I don't know. It doesn't matter how popular people think I am, even today, that, for instance, I have had people to come up to me and say, you know, Rosa, so-and-so is going to come to town, and they're going to be at the arena in Baltimore. And I said, no, I'm not familiar. They said, are you joking? I mean, you've been in the business for 30, 40, 50 years, and you never heard of so-and-so? No, I've never heard of them. I don't make pretend I know somebody I don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm very aware of artists and all across the board. But if it's an artist that I never heard of, then, you know, I never heard of them. And so I don't allow myself to get caught up into a conversation where they think, because I am who I am, that I know John Blow. Then I'll let them know straight up, no, I'm not familiar with John Blow. I think I might have heard the name, but no, I don't know them. That would give that person an opportunity to tell me more about me if they want me to know, or it doesn't matter, because if I don't know, I don't know. And I've noticed that in some cases, promoters make pretend they know artists that they don't know anything about, and then when they're questioned about it, they're trapped. Because they are talking about something they have no idea, and it makes them look like a fool.
Excellent. Excellent. That makes a lot of sense. And to piggyback on that statement, is it a good idea for a person having an interest but no background in being a music promoter take an internship to get hands-on industry experience?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure where they would go for that. I'm self-taught. I came from a very large family on my father's side. Matter of fact, he's a baby of 13. And my mother's side of the family, she is the baby, was the baby of 6. And, but there's no one as far back as I can trace back, even to my great, great, great grandparents, cousins, aunts, uncles, et cetera, including sisters and brothers, which I have 8 sisters and brothers. I have 4 children, 27 grandchildren, and 22 great-grand. And I don't understand it, but do you realize, I want to let you know, not one person in my entire family or history of my family has been involved in music in any aspect. I'm the only person in my entire family, back as far as I can go, that ever got involved or was involved in music. So I have nothing to trace back on. It became very natural to me. I've been involved in music, as you read my bio, since professionally, since I was 12, 13 years old. And before then, I always was very, very involved and loved music, you know, singing or want to learn how to play something. But and I've heard it throughout my entire life, but I don't know where I got the gift from, except from God, because, like I said, there's no one in my family ever had a hint of showing any music in any aspect, whether singing or playing an instrument or writing music. So I would think that it either have to be, that's why I mentioned before that I believe it has to be the love of it.
Yeah.
And far as going training, I don't know if there's a school or any kind, because I never went to one, and I don't know if there's a school. I think the best bet for anyone that wants to get into the business is to surround themselves of people that is educated in the business and that are been in the business for many, many years,
right.
to keep themselves involved in it. If they know that is a performance going on at such and such a place, whether the lyrics or whether it is a nightclub or a bar, that they should put themselves in that position to find out who's promoting it and sit down with them and talk to them and just listen more than speak, because you learn a lot by listening. That's how I learned a lot, by listening. And I'm still learning today.
Absolutely.
Because the music back in the day when I was really involved is a totally different situation than today. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the contracts, the music industry, is like a total 360 degrees different. You know, I could not possibly take the knowledge that I used to have or have from the 70s, the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and use it today, except for the fact I know my music and I know my background of entertainment. But far as contract-wise and the industry itself today, it's a totally different thing than it was back then. So you just like to keep yourself informed on a consistency if you want to stay in the business.
Absolutely. Very good. Now, in marketing, like you're saying, you've got to probably do a lot of research or, like you said, be around people who are in that music if you love it from your heart. In marketing, it is also noted, as in marketing, location, location, location. I would think the same could be said for a unique, catchy name in the music industry. Therefore, and however, how did your trade name, Rambling Rose, come about?
Well, that's very unique, I must say myself. As an entertainer, as a vocalist and lead singer of my group that I put together back in the day under Rockin' Robin and Fat Daddy from the radio station, very popular DJs, that what had happened with that, they had, first of all, taken me and my group to New York, and where we recorded our song that I wrote, Thanks, Mr. DJ. Well, in the course of doing this time, after doing that, they became our manager and my booking agent as well during this era. And one of the places that we were booked was with Nat King Cole. And because of me being the leader of my group and because of the personality that I have, I never was one to sit still. And even I do that today. I got constantly be going. Well, we had a show in New York with Nat King Cole and with my group, Lil Johnny and the Twilights. And we had rehearsal. We would have rehearsal twice a day for the 4 days that we were booked there for this particular event, with Nat King Cole being the headliner. I can't remember off the top of my head who the other artist was, but we were an opening act. We became an opening act thanks to Hot Rod that booked us. Well, in the interim of being there, it was understood that we had to have rehearsal. My group had to have rehearsal at a certain time a day, but they changed the schedule and they get back to us because we were an opening act. We weren't a major act. So, but they never could get it right, far as I'm concerned, what exact time of the day that they wanted to have my group to rehearse
mm-hmm.
on stage. So while they're figuring that out, the days that I was there, I decided to do a little tour of the city. So in the neighborhood, there was other little hole-in-the-wall joints and clubs and bars that had live entertainment. So I would find myself, instead of laying around the spot where we were, to go out and check these places out. And I would, every day, I would go down to some of these cities, some of these little spots in the neighborhood, and sit and check out the bands and the entertainment they had there. And then I would come back, and so every time I get back, they said they'd been waiting on me because they ready for rehearsal. I said, well, nobody gave me a time. So making a long story short, that each time and every day they'll look for me, I was gone. But I came back in time to do the rehearsal, and they said that they can never catch up with me. So Nat told me that I was the most rambling person he ever seen in his life. He could never keep me still in one place, so when it's time for rehearsal, I was gone again. And so one day, I laughed about it because I liked the word rambling, but I never paid much attention to that. And one evening, day before we had rehearsal, I mean before we did a show, that he called me into this little room where was a piano, where he was performing, where he was playing, rehearsing. And he said, come here, Rosa, I want you to hear something. And he said, this is for you. And he played, he started tickling on ivory on a keyboard, had this sheet music up where he had this pencil between his mouth, between his teeth, his lips, and he would take it out and started making marks on this sheet music. And he said, tell me how this sound, how you like this. And he started, proceeded in writing my song about me, Rambling Rose. And he said, this is for you. And he started putting the lyrics down, and he sung part of it, and he said he was still working on it. And it started out with the first two verses, and he had like, or the first verse, and had like a line on the second verse, but he hadn't completed it. And that's how I got my name, Rambling Rose. He named a song after me, and 6 months later on the radio, I heard my song, Rambling Rose, by him.
That is just fascinating.
And so I kept that I name. I had it registered downtown. I had my name. I had it registered downtown.
Right.
I kept that name as my surname. I had it registered. And then as a CB and ham operator, CBer and a ham operator, I used that name, Rambling Rose, for that. And then, of course, going into the being a columnist, entertainment columnist for the last 27 years, that is my trade name for my column, is Rambling Rose, and the rest is history.
Oh, that's absolutely beautiful. Rosa, we're going to let you take a break, and we should be right back. Well, welcome back to Wish Upon a Star, and I thank you for listening. For comments and suggestions, please send an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, for your comments and suggestions, which we absolutely want to hear from you, send an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. We are also broadcasting on www.bbsradio.com, Station 2, Wish Upon a Star. We're going to return with our most special guest today, Rosa Rambling Rose Pryor. To continue our conversation, Rosa, we see a lot of top entertainers go on tour. On the legal component that you had spoke of, what important facts should be known as a promoter about contracts regarding local, national, and maybe international regulations?
Well, first of all, I think that anyone in the business, not only the promoter, but the artists themselves, should familiarize themselves by going to a library, bookstore, and studying on the the ins and outs of a contract, an entertainment contract. And, excuse me, but for any of the also promoter, it's really important that you connect yourself with an entertainment lawyer, because there's a lot of intimate details in certain contracts, especially with national contracts, with national artists, that with the layman person would not understand. And the fine print makes a difference. And even if it's, whether it's dealing with recording or whether it's dealing with just booking an artist, and a contract is always involved. I never book entertainment, local or otherwise. I don't care if it's my mother, or my brother, or any a family member or a friend. If they were interested in booking a band of mine, they have to sign a contract. It's business. And they always, a promoter should always stick with business, no matter who they're working with. And they should know their artists. They also should know that they should be connected, as I said before, with an entertainment lawyer that knows the ins and outs of a contract, because you sure can get fouled up with it if you don't understand the lingo.
Absolutely. We had an entertainment lawyer on our program a couple of months ago, and our listeners can certainly go online and look that up. Her name was Carl Slay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so based on that, that seems extremely important when you're talking contracts. Is it feasible to have a plan of action checklist also before engaging a group for a performance? And what might a plan of action checklist contain?
Well, I don't necessarily deal with that now, and I'm going to show it's different today than it was during the time that I was really truly involved in booking and managing groups, which I no longer do. It's been several years since I've involved myself in that, because things are so different. They have the internet and all of that kind of stuff right now, you know, with the webs and the media of that, of when it comes down to the computer. When everything that during the time I was working and doing the entertainment, everything was done by hand, including filling out a contract for the artist. And the checklist is the fact that you know, not only you should know the area that you're booking your group, you know, and that comes part of the promotion power that you have. You need to know what radio station to book, to have advertisement on. You need to know what newspaper to use to promote your group. You also need to know where should you send out flyers or put flyers in posters. This is so important in promoting your artist, because even though, let's say, you sign a contract with a restaurant or a club or venue that you're going to book your artist, and most promoters make a mistake by leaving it up to the buyer of the contract, meaning the person that signed the contract that's going to pay your group. Because you don't know who, what going to be there. Always been a type of promoter that no matter what the venue might normally have, let's say the venue every Friday and Saturday have a full house.
Mm-hmm.
I never depend on that. I always believe in doing my own promotion. I check out the area. I check out the clientele of the venue where I'm booking my artists. And then I proceed in knowing my artists that where, what radio station to book to use promotion and advertising them being going to be at this venue. I will always use flyers. Postcard flyers, I think mostly they use today, more so than 8.5 by 12 that they used back in the day. But it doesn't matter what type of written promotion papers, flyers that you use, it's really important that you work your town in the area where the artist's going to be so that more people would know about it and spread the word.
Oh, excellent. That's a very excellent point. And I know, like I said, our listeners are taking pointers, because I know I am. As an artist, I need to have that information as well. Your legacy of promotion of national and international acts are remarkable. Just give us a list of some of these well-known entertainers, such as Sir Walter Jackson.
All right. Sir Walter Jackson, I was his booking agent and promoter, I guess, for a couple of years. We became very close. I met him at Painter's Mill at one time when I was booking my bands there with some of the top-ranked promoters that used to be around, that's no longer around now. And like Sir Walter Jack Felipe, when I worked with Millie Jackson, I worked with, and I also worked with some of the top jazz artists in national artists that during that time that I went on the road with, but only for a short period of time, because during the time that I worked with national artists, such as Felipe Wynn and Sir Walter Jackson and the Clovers, and as well as Sonny Till, I was his personal promoter and manager at one time when he separated himself from the Orioles, and I talked him back to going back with his group, the Orioles, and they did so very well in Washington, D.C., and then nationally, that I worked with them up until the day he died, with Sonny Till. And the thing about that is that you have to be close to your artist. A promoter mainly don't just go out and book your artist. You need to know the good and bad of your artist. I knew when my artist was upset about something. I knew when he was had problems or did not have problems. I knew my artist enough to know that if they were unhappy about something, I was able to become a person that they could trust and rely on to talk to if they chose not to talk to anyone else. It was really important that my artist had a sound mind when they got up on stage to perform. The only thing they need to be thinking about is their audience when they perform, and not to have anything else on their mind. So I became like amateur therapist or their personal therapist, amateur-wise, and to listen to them and to advise them. And if what I couldn't advise them, I knew somebody that could. And become close to your artist that way. And that way you got the greatest performance from the artist that you could get.
Excellent. Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Because being a promoter is definitely hard work and may not be as fascinating as one thinks. What are some of the worst-case scenarios that you know of regarding the whims of both the artists and their fans?
Okay. I have to say the worst thing that I had to deal with, and it wasn't, and I have to say the worst thing, but it did not stay the worst thing.
Right.
I'm a street person, as I said before, and I take no prisoners. I can be the nicest, the kindest person that you've ever seen, but I don't know if this is a family radio or not, but I can be very shrewd as well. Well, my worst scenario on being a promoter and a booking agent is the fact that when I sign a contract with the person that hired my group, and it's all legal binding, and then at the end of my event, or near the end of my event, when I go to that person with my attaché case and my contract and collect my money for my artist to pay them, and they'll turn around and tell me that they didn't make enough money, or they didn't had a chance to go to the bank, or whatever the reason they have used and thought of to keep from paying me. Well, I would say that would have been one of the worst things that I had to deal with a person that hired my group. But I put it this way. That happened twice to me, maybe three times, but I never, not one of those three times that I didn't leave that place without my money for my group. So, you know, you can read between lines, but
right.
I've never, they underestimate me as a female promoter and booking agent. They could get away with it. And they might thought they could do that, but they did not get away with it. And before I left that venue, I got my money paid in full, you know.
Right, and that's what you're supposed to do, because like you said before, that when a male is there, they probably wouldn't even even attempt to try anything.
Exactly.
Like that.
That's what I'm saying to you. Exactly. But I've been hanging around detectives and police officers and hoodlums and hustlers, et cetera, all my life. And I am a fighter physically and very good at it. I'm also licensed to carry and have been for 40 years and still is. So I take no prisoners, as I said. And I would not allow anyone who have booked my group, no matter who they might be, to use me or to embezzle the fact that they do not have my money before the other part of my money by the end of the show to pay my group after they performed. That's not going to happen. That has been tried, but I've never walked away without the money for my group and band. So I have a good reputation with that. And any artist, national or local, that I have worked with or booked, they will tell you that Rosa don't play with her musicians. She will not allow anyone to take advantage of her musicians or entertainers.
Of course, and that's what makes you successful. For people who might be a little more low-key, mm-hmm. are there any gimmicks, slick, classic tricks that can give you the edge to compete against other promoters or to advertise your services and groups?
Well, I would just say to be the best at what you can be at. And kind of, you know, you see, if you're really into it, you can develop your own mind and thoughts about putting things together on how to promote. I don't know how I do it. It's just a natural thing for me. But I can be straight up and honest with you. In all the years I've been in the business, I have never, ever had an unsuccessful show. I have never booked a group or been part of promoting a group or a band or a singer, any venue, anywhere, and I didn't pack the house. And I feel very lucky and blessed of that because I don't think there's too many promoters can say that.
That's wonderful. And I, knowing you personally, I certainly can identify and agree and know that that is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Family Rose, you are well known and you're successful because you stayed the course, obtained the required license, worked hard. But what qualifications or education does a person need to help them to become a successful promoter?
Well, again, that's kind of difficult because I know a couple of people that consider themselves promoters. But if I should get in a conversation with them about the business as a whole, they know zero. It's almost embarrassing to talk with them. And I know a couple of promoters today. It's really embarrassing to talk with them because they know zilch about it. Now, what they do know is that they know the club owner where they can talk to the club owner and say, look, I have a group I want to book in here. And I'll make sure that they come and they drink liquor and you take the bar and I will take the door. And they'll get in there that way. So they automatically can't be called themselves a promoter. And it might turn out okay and it might not. Most cases that they might have it a half a glass full, that they didn't have a full house, they had a half a house of people that was there because they used the media of the whatever they call it now, because I'm not really into it that much, and that's the computer and the Facebook to put out the word. They become lazy. I consider it lazy. Use the Facebook or even my email as an added promotional power to what I'm selling, my group that I'm selling. Mm-hmm. But it's nothing in the world better than the leg work.
Right.
You can't go out there one Friday a week and think you can promote whatever you're doing. You have to be out there 7 days a week. There's always something going on. Even if you just go to a supper club or go somewhere and have dinner, I have stopped people, parked my car in a parking lot, and handed them a flyer and let them know that my group is going to be performing at so-and-so, that come on down and have a drink with me. I've been in a grocery store, supermarket, doing my marketing and have my flyers in my pocket or in my pocketbook or laying in the grocery cart. And as I see people, I just hand them a flyer and tell them who I am and what I got going on. And I like for them to come down and have a drink with me. I don't tell them to come in free unless it's free. You know, I don't invite people to come down as my guests because that's my profit for my people, for my music, musicians. But that's what I do. And, I mean, if you go to a doctor's or barbershop, you send and give them a flyer. You give them the information. Tell them to come out and support you. And that's what I do. I know promoters that go on the website or the Facebook and they will send messages out that the group is going to be playing at so-and-so. And that's the end of it. They don't go nowhere. I go to every cocktail sip, cabaret, bull roast, crab feast, gospel show. I find out where they are, and I make a list of them, and I'm sitting up there at every last one of them. And I don't stand outside the door and hand out flyers. I think that's, you know, you can't do that to people that's trying to promote something. I think you should ask permission. I think if you're necessary, you pay to go in and check their spot out and ask permission that you can ask them, is it okay for you to give out a flyer to their guests?
You're absolutely right, because what another business owner will see is that you support me,
mm-hmm.
I'll support you.
That's You're what happens.
Right. Based on that, I can see why you have a 50-year legacy of success. But the question that another person might want to know, too, that want to get into it, as a promoter, can you make any money? And if so, what is usually a range for a pay scale?
Okay. In my case, I did okay. I didn't become rich because I guess I chose not to go on a road where it was happening.
Yeah.
I went on a road for a little while, but during the time I was promoting national, international acts, I also was raising four children. So I couldn't stay on the road that long. I stayed on maybe a week or two at a time and came back to take care of my family, and I would go out that way accordingly, or I might go out in advance and set things up. Now, it's dependent on who you're booking and how much is involved. Usually the case of the booking agent depends on what they do. Some booking agent, promoters. Promoters don't deserve a dime because they don't do shit. I mean, they don't absolutely do nothing. They set the place up and they tell the artist that you got to be at the so-and-so at 9 o'clock and you hit at 9:30 or hit at 10 o'clock. And they just sit up there and do absolutely nothing. I haven't been able to figure that out, how they supposed to get paid that way. But when you're booking an artist, you make sure that the artists are paid well. You look out for them first. Then in order to look out for yourself to get paid, like for instance myself, if I book a group for, let's say, for example, $1,000, I'm going to book them for $1,300. $1,500, $1,600, depending on where the group is being performed, in town, out of town, around the corner, out of state, etc. Because you got to inquire your expense and your transportation. You have to be included. But that is beyond and above the salary that you pay in your group. If my group is due $200 a man, for example, then if I have a five-piece group, then I know that I have to get that money plus my percentage. You do not take, a promoter do not take their percentage from the artist.
Right.
The artist has to come first. If for whatever reason you can't get the buyer to go above that $1,000 for that five piece at $200 a man, then it's your loss. You make the decision then, I'm going to book this band regardless because I want the exposure for them and they are getting paid and I worry about me later. You just do not take from your group. A good promoter do not take from their group to make sure they're getting paid. And they do, and you know, as far as I know, unless you're in the high scales of national entertainment, you don't get rich from being a promoter or a booking agent. Unless you're working consistently with a high profile recording artist, promoter or booking agent do not get rich. You know, it's the love of doing and covering your expenses is what, you know, you do. And I was good at that. I covered my expenses. I made sure my band was paid in full. They got the highest pay than most or any other promoter could pay them. And at the same time, I was able at the end of the day to buy me a house from my share.
Wow, that's great. But like you said, again, we go back to hard work. We're going to take another break, and we're going to come back for our final segment. Welcome back to the show, Wish Upon a Star. My name is Andell Banks. I'm your host. And we would love to hear your comments and suggestions. Please send them through an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, musicradio34@gmail.com for any suggestions and comments. We are broadcasting on station www.bbsradio.com, station 2, Wish Upon a Star. Our distinguished guest today is Rosa Ramblin' Rose Pryor. We continue, Rosa, with the most fascinating thing of all, and that is your recent publication. And you can maybe give us a little synopsis before we go off the air.
Yes. First of all, witches, I have enjoyed tremendously doing.
Okay.
As you mentioned, it's write my book. I made that decision of publishing a book about Pennsylvania Avenue, which was my first book that I did in 2003, which is still selling, by the way, very well. And I'm so proud of that. I had no idea that it would be going on so strongly now as it was from the day that I published it. And it's called African American Entertainment in Baltimore.
Right.
I decided to do this when I resigned, or retired, I should say, from the managing and booking the bands and promoting the groups and bands. I retired from that business back in 2002, and I decided to, after having started my scholarship foundation, I was been with the newspapers as an entertainment columnist for two major newspapers in Baltimore, the Baltimore Times and the Afro-American newspaper, which I have so much enjoyed writing about the local community people and the entertainment there. And so, therefore, during the course of being that entertainment columnist, as I am today with both newspapers, one of the things that my that is known, that people know about me, and my tradition is to, on holidays, especially Black History Month, is to do something about local, to write something about local musicians and entertainers, mainly because no one else writes about them. All the major newspapers and magazines write about national acts and international acts. You very rarely ever see anything by any newspaper or media done for the local entertainers. So that's what I decided to do. So like on holidays such as Black History Month, I would want to do something about the local entertainers and the places in Baltimore like Pennsylvania Avenue. But in my research, I realized the fact when I got ready to do my column, there was not one document of any kind about our local musicians and entertainers, our clubs and bars and restaurants. That encouraged me to write the book about Pennsylvania Avenue.
I also got that book, and I have the other one too, Rosa, which celebrates a time which you have in your introduction.
Right.
Time in our past that enforced expectations of excellence and captured the highest quality of people. And that comes from your newest publication, African American Community, History and Entertainment in Maryland. Remembering All the Yesterdays, 1940 through 1980.
That is correct.
Rosa, this has been an absolutely very informative conversation and interview. Tell our listeners how they can reach you and also obtain your publications.
I'd be more than happy to. They can reach me by emailing me at rosapryor@aol.com, or they can also go to my website, which is www.rosapryormusic.com or www.rambling-rose.com. They can also feel free to call me at any time at 410-833-9474.
Could you repeat that information again, please?
Certainly. They can reach me by emailing me at rosapryor@aol.com, either or go to my website, www.rambling-rose.com or rosapryormusic.com. And they also feel free to call me anytime at 410-833-9474.
Rosa, thank you ever so much. God bless you. And please take care of yourself.
I promise you I will. And thanks so very much again for having me on, Andel, for having me on your show. And may God continue to bless you and much success to you.
Thank you. In closing, ladies and gentlemen, again, we want to thank you for listening to Wish Upon a Star on www.bbsradio.com, Station 2. All of our programs are in the archives on the website. Again, this is Andel and your co-ordinator, Denise Banks, saying, keep reaching for the stars.